Welcome back to the Rubber Cares podcast. I'm your host, Gina Burke. Today on the show, we have Dot Sheehan. She is the founder and CEO of Operation Hattrick and is on the show for the third season in a row, and we're so excited to have her. Red River Charitable Foundation and Dot have worked together for years, and I know you'll be inspired to hear what she's doing for veterans all over the country. Dot is an amazing guest and storyteller, and I can't wait to dive in to find out what's new with OHT and how things have evolved for them over the years as a nonprofit. So with that, Dot, welcome to the show. Dot, welcome back to the Red River Cares podcast. You are officially our third guest. Our third time guest. So you've been on the show all three seasons. So we're so psyched to have you back.
I'm happy to be back. I'm honored that you want me back three times.
It's our pleasure. We'd have you on every episode if we could. So if you don't mind, in case people haven't caught the first two episodes, maybe just quickly give us a little your high-level elevator pitch about Operation Hattrick, what you're all about, and your mission.
Operation Hattrick is a nonprofit organization that supports the recovery of wounded service members and veterans, and we do that by selling product and merchandise, the proceeds of which we donate to nonprofits that fill our mission. Bottom line, we fill some critical gaps in care where other programs or agencies do not. It's dedicated to Nate Hardy and Mike Cope, two Navy SEALs who were killed in Iraq in 2008.
Yes. Tell me, I mean, I've heard your origin story before, but what I haven't ever heard you talk about was how you move from inception, so idea of a nonprofit or where the vision potentially could be, where you think you're going to go, and the steps in which to actually get there. So if you could think back however many years ago to when OHT started, how did you move from, I want to do something, to actually going to do it?
Well, I will start by saying I had no clue. Absolutely no clue. A lot of things have fallen into place. But you know, I listened to a radio station, Boston radio station, trivia contest that day. The question was, what's the one thing head wounded soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan want the most? It was a baseball cap. That will cover wounds, swelling, treatment, burns, all of that. And it just struck me that, really, come on, it's a baseball cap. Can't you get these guys something, right? And I was at UNH at the time, and in athletics, part of my job was to bring projects to the university and or athletics that would give good exposure. I think Operation Hattrick has done more than that. So in the middle of the night, I thought, okay, what would we call something? And we lived and died by hockey, so thought Operation Hattrick. There was no business model for the first couple of years. We were just donating hats to VA medical centers for their head wounded soldiers and service members. So at some point, somebody said, you should make this a business, but you shouldn't do a for-profit or nobody will buy into it. This needs to be a nonprofit. Again, had no clue what that really, really meant. And said, our business model is different than any nonprofit business model out there. We get, there's a royalty charge to every hat, sweatshirt, cornhole board we sell. And that's what we donate out to organizations that fill our mission.
Yep.
But if I had known the financial part of it, the legal part of it, oh, the financial part puts me in a cold sweat. Ooh, boy. Yeah. And luckily, we have an accounting firm that does our work pro bono. We're forever grateful for that. Wow. And we have an attorney that we haven't had to use much, but we have had to use it. And there are just some things in nonprofit you can and cannot do.
Yeah. So how did the model switch, you know, from this initial, like, we're just donating hats to this sort of business model where you're now selling, so you're on that side of it, this for-profit although you're a nonprofit and everything's right. being donated. So how did that occur? Was that when you've assembled a board? Was that just the nature of the nonprofit and how the evolution went? Like, tell me more about how that crossover happened.
You know, I'm not sure when the board happened. Probably when we established the 501c3. I mean, that would make sense, right? I mean, we had other people giving us advice, but we work with Collegiate Licensing Company. And they manage our licensing program for us on a pro bono basis again and forever grateful. And there was a vice president there who had this idea about the way we would set it up, but said, you need three things if this is what you're going to do. You need, because we were in the college space, you need schools to sign on that they would want to adopt Operation Hattrick, which means sell our product in their bookstore and at retail, right? And they would promote it. You need to find a headwear provider, because at the time we were only headwear oriented, and you need to have distribution. We had none of that. And right. I remember this guy, he was at the Phoenix Zoo one day calling everybody, will you take on Operation Hattrick? 47 is the only one that said yes. And so that was the beginning of that. UNH was the bookstore, and that's the distribution we had. End of story. But we went out to all the schools that belonged to CLC, and we asked them if they would adopt Operation Hattrick, and I was cautioned about it probably will take a year dot to get 50 schools. In 3 months, we had 100.
Oh, my God.
And so some do a lot with it, some don't do much with it, some don't do anything with it, but we knew right then, oh, boy, okay, we have something here. And that's how it began.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the model is literally a win-win-win every which way you slice it. Like, I don't see where this could go wrong. Like, it's just like you're supporting this nonprofit, you're giving back to veterans, like you're representing a cause that feels really good. I mean, I don't know. I just, to me, I'm like, this is a no-brainer. Who would say no to this?
Well, during the pandemic, you kind of wondered, would you rather, you know, you play that game with your kids? Would you rather a hot dog or a hamburger, right? Would you rather be dependent on retail, which was in the tank,
right?
Or people giving you individual donations? Oh, boy, that's not much of a choice. I still would choose retail because people had free money. Inflation wasn't here. They could go. Right. I mean, there were no games, no tickets, no parking, no nothing, right? But they were buying online. Go figure. So I'd still rather be in that position.
Yeah. What, for you personally, I guess I'm wondering, you know, you started as the executive director of this nonprofit, no experience doing that. Like what's that growth been like for you? What was like a challenge or something you didn't expect or just a way that you really surprised yourself?
Well, you know what? I really had a plan, and that plan was someday I'm retiring from UNH, but who can retire these days, right?
No.
I would like an income. So I started this plan while I was at UNH. I got some release time to work on it. Then it got bigger then, and I had to make a decision. But, I had that plan to do that. So, and I was older, right? I was retirement age. So I had a lot of experience already, and I could bring things with me. Again, the finance side was a little shaky, as was the legal side. But I certainly knew how to develop relationships because I was the licensing person at UNH out of athletics. I already knew CLC. I knew their process. I knew retail more than a little bit. So I had a lot of things in place that I could bring with me.
That's really cool. I think people don't realize the importance of a board to the nonprofit. And I guess I want you to talk a little bit about how your board was assembled and what they're bringing to the operation.
That's interesting that you ask that and you say that, and you're absolutely right about it. And it has to be a careful, strategic process. I will say to people, I never wanted us to be too serious. Now that sounds like we're a happy-go-lucky group, which we are. But I didn't want it to go down the road of you have to do this at this time, and unless you do that, you can't be whatever. And none of us are like that. Well, putting a board together, You have to understand the kind of people you need. I mean, I needed somebody who understood retail. We had to have somebody who knew the military. I didn't know the military. Preferably somebody who had been in the military. And we got one who went to the Naval Academy, and he actually served with Nate Hardy in Fallujah. So he knew the family a little bit. We made Steve Hardy, Nate's father, the president of the board, which was genius, because there's so much mishandling of nonprofits, and military mm-hmm. is one of them, that when people know the father of this Navy SEAL is the president of your board, they assume there's no funny business going on. And so that was very necessary. We needed somebody like an Andy Beaupre, who knew public relations, knew how to get some exposure and all of that. And I just went for, and they say you shouldn't do this, people I knew and trusted and who believed in the cause.
Yeah, that is huge. I'm the vice chair for our local community kitchen, and we need some board members, and we're doing that process right now, that real strategic, like, where are the gaps in the organization that we can get board members to help fill them, whether it's HR experience to help us with our, onboarding or, employee handbook, things like that. But yeah, you have to be so strategic in like who you're bringing on, who do you trust, who cares about this mission enough to want to show up and right. help us.
Right.
They just help so much with all of it, making it happen, even though you're obviously doing a ton of work on the front end. But yeah, you need that strong board behind you when you have a nonprofit.
Yeah, and I'm sure you belong to some organizations where there are some horror stories about boards. There's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of control grabbing, all of that. I have said from day one, I've lived long enough to experience this. A group of people, we all genuinely like each other. We all pull in the same direction. We're all supportive, and we all want the same result, and we're all passionate about what we do. Man, if you can get all of those, you've got some really special people.
Magic.
And I wouldn't hesitate to bring any of them anywhere I go. And that's a really good feeling. And we'll probably get into the songwriting program we did in Maine. Four of our board members were there.
Yeah.
And you just want to expose them to the things you're doing so they even become more passionate about it.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we're into collaborations now. And so, you can donate money, and that's well, and people really appreciate it. But if you can get a couple of your partners to go in on a collaboration, something that will help veterans, then wow, we've got a couple that we've done this year, and this one was really special. So Steve Hardy and his wife lost their first son, Josh, when he was 17 to brain cancer. And when he was faced with that death knell and that diagnosis, he worked through it with his art and his music. Huge into music. He was one of the first ones to get a Make-A-Wish event, and he went out to Seattle to visit some grunge bands. Pearl Jam signed a Fender guitar for him and all of that.
Amazing.
And then, of course, they lost Nate, so they've lost two of three sons. Both were into music. Josh really into art, and his art got very dark the sicker he got. So Steve one day said, Dot, what do you think about taking Creative Vets, I'll tell you about them in a minute, and the Travis Mills Foundation, and let's collaborate. Creative Vets is a nonprofit that brings closure, exposure to post-traumatic stress events that veterans have seen, and work through all of that trauma through music. They do it through art, and they do it through music. And their executive director, Richard Casper, was a Marine, is a retired Marine. You're never a was a Marine.
Yeah.
And he went into the Marines thinking, oh, I want to be deployed so bad. Well, his assignment was to protect George W. Bush. That's hardly being deployed. But he did get deployed. And his best friend sitting next to him in a Humvee was killed one day by an IED explosion. And he came back from that, could have been one of those statistics, right? Took an art course, didn't even know he had any talent, and said, oh man, this has helped so much, and then learned about the music side. So what they do is they bring veterans who have never told these stories before and, quite frankly, are really being challenged by mental health to Nashville, to the Grand Ole Opry. And they work with mentors and they work with some of the best songwriters in the business to tell that story through song. At the end of their session, they have a song that they put on YouTube or the channel they have. I'll tell you what, it is unbelievably powerful. And if you're there to watch it work, when we were in Maine, we were introduced to two guys who had been in Vietnam together. They've never done a group of Vietnam guys. They have held those stories for 52 years.
Ooh.
And when you tell those, they've never done a Gold Star family before, Donna and Steve, they helped them write a song, and the song was about the boys talking to them after death, right?
Oof, Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to need a minute.
It was unbelievable. So I said to Richard, look, we will pay for this if you bring mentors, songwriters, veterans, and yourselves to Maine for a songwriting program, a program you've never done before. And what he's never done before is have a veteran invite a buddy who's going through some stuff, right?
Cool.
So, yeah, Lenny invited Larry. And they worked with Johnny and Heidi, who are songwriters, a couple that's been married for 3 years, and really, really powerful stuff. So that's what went on for a couple of days there. They all say the food was absolutely spectacular, and everybody in the world now wants to go. But, but you know, for us, we're really close now to a couple of those guys. CJ Soler, who's had a couple of number one hits. He had an LSU hat on. I said, that thing, you know, I gotta send you some right stuff here. So he's got it now, and so we talk regularly, which is great. Larry lives in Beverly, Mass., so Larry and I talk regularly. But they are just really hot. And there's a wait list, Gina, of hundreds of veterans who want to go through this program.
Wow. It's an amazing experience on so many levels. But I guess I'm wondering, tell me more about what that was like for your board members to participate, but also just be part of that experience.
Yeah, a couple of them are really into music, so that helped.
Good.
And they immersed themselves because it was very, I mean, the retreat is spectacular. One of the songwriters, he said, I just got out of my record deal today. I am so happy. I could use some whiskey right now. We're like, you allow us to drink? So we said, well, I don't know about that. He said, beer would be fine. He said, give me a couple of beers and I'll go out in the canoe on the lake. Oh, no, we're not putting you in a canoe on the lake. You're going to be drinking beer. Oh, yeah. But you got to know them, right? You got to know the song. Yeah. They were regular people. They had opened the pool up. I had my 11-year-old grandson and Danielle, who does some social media for us too. She brought her 11-year-old son. So the two boys were like, they spent 2 hours in that pool. A couple of the guys went in the pool. So they opened up everything for us. Again, the food was, what's so special about it is the volunteers, Gina. In that kitchen, you had a chef and a sous chef. They could have gone anywhere to work, right? They wanted to work there. And there were two women, 75 years old each. They came from Portland every day to volunteer in the kitchen in the summer. Seriously, an hour and a half away.
It's amazing.
Right? It is amazing, right? So our board got to know everybody there. Travis Mills himself came in and spoke, and he stayed a couple of hours, and that was powerful for everybody. Our board has met, except for one, has met Travis, but they were into the music. I heard them asking questions about how do you get paid now? Has streaming hurt you or helped you? Oh, it was a lovely conversation.
Wow. All right. Are you ready for a rapid fire round?
One word, right?
Yes.
Can so I will ask the word?
I'll ask you a couple of questions. You can only respond with one word until the very last question. So, okay, here we go. What color hair has made you feel the most glamorous?
Pink and blue.
Okay. what was there a celebrity or artist that you met that you actually felt pretty starstruck around?
Fillmore.
Oh. When you were a young girl growing up, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Not fat.
That's amazing. Okay. I may already know this, but if you had all the money in the world, but you had to give it all away to a charity or a cause, what are you choosing?
Yeah, I would certainly tackle what I'm tackling now and try to get at that 22 a day.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the suicide rate is not going down. It's going up. And in the last 4 or 5 months, the number of retired, well-established, you thought pretty okay guys, Navy SEALs and whatever, have committed suicide. Really bothersome.
Oof.
Didn't see it coming.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I think they've been holding that in. I mean, you take that personality of a Navy SEAL. I tell them they have to have something wrong with them to become a Navy SEAL in the first place. I mean, you've got to be a little bit off to become a Navy SEAL. But thank God we have them, right? They are probably 10 times more sure they don't want to tell anybody that they're having a difficult time.
Yeah.
That's not the persona of a Navy SEAL.
Right.
And how long can you live with that? I mean, I go back to Twitch, right, who was on the Ellen Show. I mean, we all thought he was great and he had it all together. He was suffering.
Right. Yeah. Especially like you're saying, at these creative vet programs where they've been holding things in for 52 years, and to just like let it out in some way must just be such a relief.
Right. Larry said when he came back from Vietnam, they had armed National Guard outside Logan Airport. And his father said, you don't need these people. He said, oh, you have no idea. When you get out on the street, you have no idea how he's going to be treated. He said, the saddest day in my father's life was to watch those people absolutely torture my son verbally because he was in the military. This is a young kid who probably was part of the draft at the time, who had no say over where he was, and they were treating him this way. His father and he never got over it.
Do you have any ideas of how just basic civilians can support veterans better, especially through their mental health issues that you're talking about?
And, you know, there are a ton of veteran organizations and a lot that try to get at mental health, and all are doing good. I mean, if we're all trying, you know, it's becoming aware, because somebody said to me, well, aren't you glad you were listening to that radio station that day? I said, aren't you glad I did something about it? That was a very popular radio station. I bet there wasn't one person who did anything about it except me.
Right.
A lot of people give lip service to helping, and they don't. Some people throw money at it, which is helpful. Some people get involved. I mean, if you look at your typical kid who may go in after high school, usually it's a kid who doesn't know what he wants to do, right? And either gets guided correctly or comes out and still has some issues. I think there's not enough regard overall for the military, and that maybe have gone on forever.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Well, as we kind of come to our close here, is there anything that you want to tell the audience about, either things you have coming up or ways that they can support OHT or just what you got going on?
Yeah, you can certainly make a purchase. And that you can go on operationhattrick.org, and we have, it says, donate now or buy now, shop now. We don't carry any inventory or sell it, but there are links there that you can go to and buy it. On Fanatics, we've got a huge selection of Coliseum product. You can make an individual donation or just get involved. You know, just be aware of what they're going through. If you look what they get paid on average every year, I don't know how a lot of them survive. And if they're stationed like in a place called like San Diego, really difficult because the prices are so high. Really difficult. Right. Sometimes families can't go with them because they have to be in certain housing and they can't afford an apartment or whatever. So it is difficult. So if people can become more educated, more aware, kind of feel like that's country music with me. I had no education about country music. So, yeah, if people can get educated, be more aware, we count on the military. What would we do without them?
Right. Right. We have to give back to them in whatever way that is. Yeah. There's a million ways.
Yeah. I would say anybody, you don't even have to be deployed. You can come out of the military with some mental health challenges, like all of us have mental health challenges thanks to the pandemic. Right. It's this suicide and the mental health challenge side of things is, every day somebody will come to us looking for some help because they either have a good idea or they're established. And we have some really good partners, a really good board. You're one of the really good partners for sure. We appreciate it.
Wow, I love that conversation with Dot. Her and I have never spoken about that angle of Operation Hattrick before, and I really hope you got value out of learning how her nonprofit got started, the important role of your board of directors, and how missions need to evolve based on the needs of the people that you serve. You can learn more about Dot and Operation Hattrick by going to their website at operationhattrick.org, and I really encourage you to sign up for their newsletter. Not only is it really fun, but you'll get important updates and figure out how you can get involved. And always, don't forget to check out redriver.com and follow us on social at Think Red or at Red River Charitable Foundation. And as always, tune in next time to be inspired.